Check out the Subway $5 everyday value range. 4 seriously good Subway 6-inch subs. Delicious value all day, every day at Subway. Limited time only at participating restaurants. Additional costs for extras. The
Big Breakfast. Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Hello there, welcome to the catch-up. Anyone have the shit beaten out of them over the weekend in Bali by a massive NRL player?
No.
Gee,
I wish I was there.
You know what? One person did.
I honestly think they should let the locals know. It's like almost like a volcano warning. Like, hey guys, an NRL team's turning up and it's the off season.
You're wrong.
Run.
You should have to declare, or they should have to wear their Melbourne Storm jerseys around with their name on the back. Because if you realised you were donging a mate of Nelson Asofa Solomona's on the head with a stubby, you wouldn't do it.
Do you think it was all a bit awry because it was the full moon? Was a full moon weekend? Was the anniversary of the Bali bombings?
Oh, it was too on the weekend.
Maybe it was senses were a bit heightened and everyone was feeling a bit emotional and a bit riled up with the moon and the anniversary.
Do they watch? Yeah, well, they do get Aussie TV over there in Bali. Would they have watched the great race? Because that's all you need, $2 bin tanks for 6 hours.
Oh, that's true.
Would be great armour.
Do you know how much he'd have to drink? What'd you say? He's like 6'8", 120
kilos. He's about 122 or 3 kgs. Yeah, 6'8".
200 centimetres.
That's hollow legs.
That's a big unit.
Hey, you mentioned the great race. Scott McLaughlin, winner of Bathurst 1000, joined us this morning.
How good was he? How good was he? What a time.
Your mate, we didn't mention it on the show, but your mate Chaz Mostert, he was a bit of a dickhead on the mountain. You don't have to say that, but that's
there?
What I saw.
He tried to come out on the outside and he took out his partner Cam Waters, but Cam Waters took him out last year, so maybe this was a bit of a revenge.
They're in the same team. Can you imagine the garage when they went back there after?
Not happy.
He's just a stupid bogan from Jimboomba, Chaz.
Oh, hey, I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't say that.
Isn't your husband from down that way?
Yeah, you can call
him
stupid.
He's a bogan too.
He's still a good friend of the show. I remember I beat him in that motorised esky race.
Oh, yes. No, a great photo.
It was a pretty good day.
Wonder he didn't smash into you that day too.
No, very true. Hey, you went to the Broncos ball on Saturday?
Yeah, I did. I went to the Broncos ball and I noticed something, that I didn't like, and that was that everybody left way too early. I was ready to party and everyone left and went home early. I was waiting. I was on the D floor and I'm like, where is everybody? It's 10:30 and everyone's gone home. Apparently they went and danced somewhere else. I wasn't invited.
What does that say?
You also revealed one of the great stories today. Your proposal is meant to be a time of romance and yours wasn't really.
No, well, Corey left me sitting at the table by myself for 45 minutes while he went to the toilet, and so I assumed maybe he had a bout of the squirts. But it seems...
Is that romantic?
To put it lightly.
There's two sides to every story, and his story was slightly chaotic.
I don't think there's been many good proposals.
No. I always just said
they always seem to go wrong.
You know, like you go to so much effort, you know, like there's so much thought in it. I just said to Corey, you know, I wouldn't care if you just rolled over in bed one morning and said to me, I want to wake up next to you for the rest of my life. And that was it. I would be more happy with that than sat at a table at a buffet by myself.
I'd rather shit myself in a fire exit.
And wrestle a swan.
Instead, you just get woken up with a broomstick prodding you in the back.
Hey, that's not a broomstick. How did you propose?
Oh, a Tuesday night at an Indian restaurant there at Paddington. I just finished training and I realised it was the same night. So you went to an anniversary night. It was the same night 4 years after we'd met. I thought, then I don't have to remember any dates if I do it on the same night.
So
I
got home from footy
and walked 100 metres down the road and, just the Indian people went, what are you doing?
Did you get down on one knee, Martin?
Well, they thought I was ill because they had a bad reputation, this Indian restaurant.
That's
for
great.
Us having a spew.
There you were, just two people pissing sweat.
Did you go old school? Curry. Did you ask Kath's parents for permission?
Yes, I did. Her father. But you know what? Because she's one of seven girls in her family, he said, which one?
Oh.
No, he didn't. He said, the third sister, he did. He said, which one are you after? He goes, oh, I'd like to ask a hand to your marriage, the hand of your marriage, whatever he said. And he said, which one? Now, which one are you? How long have you been going out with her?
Who are you?
Oh, exactly. At least he knew me.
Did you get down on one knee, Nick?
Yeah, I did.
Romantic?
I thought I'd told both of my wife's sisters that I was planning on doing it. And it was at their place where they grew up and their parents still live there. And I told one just before dinner. I was like, hey, after dinner, so I'll pop the question, And she just went, what the f-? pardon? No. And I went, oh, no, I forgot to tell you.
I forgot to cross that T.
And then ran, told the parents, and then, yeah, got down on one knee. And it, God, it took me a fair while to get the question out.
All right. Can we tomorrow on the
question
show...
was, what are you all looking at? I'd had a skinful.
Look away.
Can we... What's the name of that show, Bride and Prejudice?
Bride and Prejudice.
Anyone ever rung the father and he goes, no, has he, and been knocked
said
back?
No.
I want to see if that's happened.
Let's do that tomorrow.
Nightmare in-laws.
Put it on the board.
That's a good one. All right. We'll do that tomorrow.
Can we go home soon?
We'll go home now.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
See ya.
Enjoy the catch-up.
See you, Nelson.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
The Great Race stopped Australia yesterday, especially the end. I've never seen an ending like it.
McLaughlin is in good shape, but now he cannot afford a mistake at the bottom, and we've seen them today. What a year for Team Penske. Scott McLaughlin wins the Super Cheap Auto Bathurst 1000 of 2019.
The happiest bloke in Australia yesterday. How's he feeling this morning, Scott McLaughlin?
Pretty dusty now, but look, unbelievable. Cannot believe it, guys. So thank you.
Tears of joy in your eyes as you finished that final lap. What does that moment mean to you? Why is Bathurst so important?
Oh, look, Bathurst is it's a legendary race. You know, everyone who's, you know, somewhat big in supercars has won this race, and you know, now to finally put my name on that trophy alongside my teammate Alex, you know, it's just something I'll never forget. But oh my God, it was a pretty pressure cooker race, and I'll never forget that one, that's for sure.
Can I just ask, did you really, as you said yesterday, dream of standing on the roof of your car after you'd won Bathurst when you were a kid? Did that really happen?
Yeah, I know, I promise you. I wanted Bathurst more than a championship since I was a little kid, because you just need the perfect day, and you know, everything needs to go your way. And I always dreamt of maybe the crowd potentially cheering my name, and you know, that was that certainly happened yesterday. I'll never forget it. Absolutely never forget it.
Scotty, you mentioned your teammate Alex there. What? How? Like, I always go, who gets the credit for this race? And I know it's a huge team effort. And the co-drivers have to race a minimum of 52 laps or something like that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
How do you sort out who races what laps and how many laps you race?
Yeah, look, we had a pretty good strategy. We actually sorted it out the night before, you know, who was going to start the race. So I was going to start the race and then, you know, do about 14-odd laps and then put Alex in. But it turned out that a lot of the other teams went the other way, and they put their main driver in while Alex was in. So he had to hold out in front of all the main drivers, which was really tough, but he did such a good job. And it put us in a really good spot to, you know, attack them when I was back in the car against co-drivers. And, you know, you try and, you know, get the right strategy, and, you know, you need a little bit of luck along the way, and we certainly got that.
Hey, the answer to who's the most important thing should have been Roger Penske, because he's the billionaire who pays the bills. How is he? He's had an amazing year. One Indy, one Indianapolis, won the Indy Cars, and now Bathurst. Ooh. How happy was he with you?
Oh, he was stoked. Stoked with the whole team, the organisation. You know, we've focused on this for, you know, six to 8 months. We've been, you know, that was our number one focus, was to win this race. We've been close before. We had a great car a couple of years ago, but didn't get the Vickies. So, and now, you know, as well for Dick Johnson, it's 25 years since Dick. He won it. So,
did he cry? Did Dick cry?
Yeah. He kissed me on the cheek, and he doesn't do that normally. So it was unbelievable. And, you know, to do it 25 years later for him was unbelievable.
How did you celebrate last night, Scott? What did you get up to?
I just had a couple of teas and then went to bed. I partied with my team. I enjoyed, you know, I just tried to soak it in as much as I could.
How many shoeies?
Well, I can't believe
I did one shoey on the podium. Yes. That was it.
That's horrible. That's an 1,000-kilometre shoe that you're drinking out of. Have you been ill?
It only did one stint. Yeah, no, I changed my boots mid-race. Okay. Yeah. So it's not too bad. It's done about 400K, yeah.
Fabulous. Yeah. So happy for you, mate. You're still leading the series. You've had an incredible year, but now you're a Bathurst champ. Good on you, mate.
Thanks, guys. Go the All Blacks.
Oh, my God. Hold on a
sec.
That's a yellow card.
How did he do that?
We'll allow it. He is the Bathurst winner.
That's about right in at the end.
Big Breakfast, Triple M.
Bathurst, it was on yesterday, and there's a lot of talk about controversy off the back of the race, but I feel the most controversial thing was before the race even started.
Oh, not that false start with the CO2 going into that young bloke's helmet.
No, Marto, even worse. Haven't listened to this.
Yeah, I feel even more nervous because I've got some exciting news. Charlie, I love you with all my heart. I couldn't imagine my life without you.
Oh, my God.
Will you marry me?
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah, oh, my God. I love Bathurst. I love it even more.
That's Liam Talbot of Liam Talbot Racing proposing to his girlfriend, Charlie Robinson, on the track at the start line before the race.
Well, just hear the background, a car dropping into second.
Yeah,
just such a...
And I think there's nothing more uncomfortable than those big event proposals, you know, at like Suncorp where people do it before the game, before the big screen. Like, I just find that really unromantic. Mm. And it seems that Charlie Robinson was more interested in doing the interview post-proposal than she was in reveling in the moment with her new fiancé. And I just was like, she was like, oh, my God, I'm so excited. I'm like, oh, my God, this is cringeworthy. I couldn't watch it. And so, I mean, I'm all, you know, for romantics and I love a good love story, but this was just uncomfortable.
She's the blonde chick that used to be in High Five.
She was
right?
in High Five, yeah. Okay. And so she's now married into the Talbot, will marry into the Talbot empire. They've got a little bub together, been together for a few years. But it reminded me of an uncomfortable, awkward proposal of my own. And that was when Corey proposed to me. He took me down to the Sheraton. He took me down to the Sheraton because I love a buffet, boys. And
Sheraton in Brisbane?
Yeah, no, the Sheraton on the Gold Coast. Yeah, you know, they've got that big, beautiful seafood buffet. And I get a bit of food envy, so I like to have lots of options. So Corey knows that I'm a buffet girl. So I thought I'll take you to the nicest buffet in town to propose.
Were you competing with a busload of Asian tourists at the prawn party? You know how they go crazy for the prawns?
I was, and I hit the buffet hard, Marto. But the uncomfortable part was not that he took me to a buffet. It was that he went missing for 45 minutes. And I'm sitting there because we were just on our anniversary. It was our 4 or 5 year anniversary together. And I'd run into someone from school at the buffet and they said, oh, what are you doing here? I said, oh, Corey and I are here for dinner.
Shut up. I'm getting food. Get out of the way.
It's our four year anniversary. They're like, oh, he might propose. He might pop the question. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to propose. So I sit down at the table with my plate of food and I'm looking at him in anticipation, waiting for him to propose, which he then doesn't do. He gets up and he says, I need to go to the bathroom. He then disappears for 45 minutes. So now I'm like, oh my gosh, he's got cold feet. He's nervous. He's left me. He's gone back home and now I'm stuck here by myself.
They put crab legs out and getting them all. Was it food poisoning in the end?
It turns out that he had gone to check in at the reception. Had lost his credit card, so he couldn't pay for it. So then he had to ring his mum to pay to secure the room over the phone.
No.
He's then gone down to the car park to get our bags out, which he secretly packed and brought along with him. He gets lost in the car park of tunnels.
Oh, what?
Gets stuck in a fire exit, finally makes his way out of the fire exit. He gets then holed up by a drake. You know, those big swans that they have roaming the gardens down at the Sheraton. What? So he can't get across the pathway he wants to because there's a big swan there. So he goes around the other way.
He's scared of a swan
Then he gets about a gastro, and 45 minutes later, he finally turns up at the table. But because he has no credit card, he can't order drinks. He's only prepaid for the buffet, so he's nervous as hell. He can't have a drink of beer because he can't order a beer because he's got no money.
And the gastro, you don't want to be drinking.
And I'm sitting there going, "Where the bloody hell have you been?" He's like, "Oh, I was just in the toilet, darling," because the proposal was unbeknownst to me, so I had no idea that he was doing this.
Wow.
I'm like, "You've just left me sitting here for 45 minutes. What have you been doing?"
Killed a swan.
Lo and behold.
Finally
get back to
money.
The room and gets down on one knee and proposes. And it was all worth it in the end. But could you even imagine?
Jesus.
What a ride.
What a ride. Lucky I said yes in the end, I guess.
Terribly unromantic as well.
Terribly
not
unromantic.
Not the way you want it to go, is it?
A bloke who had to borrow money off his mother for a hotel room. That's who you're saying yes to.
Pretty sexy.
Proposals are supposed to be the most romantic thing, you know. It's so much thought, so much preparation. It's a big thing, you know, telling the woman that you love or the man, if you propose to, you know, him, you know, it's the most romantic thing.
Nerves can get the better of us.
Nerves can get the better on you. I want to hear your stories. The most unromantic proposals. Proposals that went disastrously wrong.
Yeah.
Jane from West End. What happened with you, Jane?
Oh, I proposed to my husband and we were going for our annual trip with all his university mates to Coolum Beach. And we were at the beach. I'd organised for the plane to fly over. But the plane took quite a while. And so most of our friends left to go back to the pub.
Oh.
And
Jane, was this a plane with a banner behind it? Is that what we're looking
at? Yeah. The big banner, you know, that I paid quite a bit of money for as a young little, you know, young person.
Yes.
And, you know, we'd been swimming. My husband was, he was busting to get back to the pub too. I'm my boyfriend at that stage.
Yes.
Anyway, the plane comes over and I'm waiting with anticipation, waiting for him to read the sign, waiting. And he goes, "Is that a banner behind that plane? What? I can't read it. I haven't got my glasses."
Oh, no.
So what, did you have to read it to him in the end, Jane?
No, we did have one friend left that didn't go to the pub, so he read to "Dear Jay, marry me, love Jane." But it was just the biggest letdown. The nerves, could have been the excitement,
could have been a Jetstar flight. Everyday low fares. I love you. Will you marry me?
Barry, what's your proposal story?
My partner actually gave me a ring that I could use when I proposed to her, and I proposed. I went to put it on her finger, and I thought, geez, that's a bit tight. So she just shoved it on, and we ended up going to the hospital and getting it cut off later that night.
It's too small. A finger had swelled.
She was that excited that, she just shoved it on, and she thought, oh, I'll be right. It used to fit me, but, I don't know.
I think, Barry, the most unromantic part of that was that she gave you her own ring to propose with.
Well, she gave me a ring so later we could go in and choose an engagement ring together.
Okay.
A one for sizing.
Like a temporary sort of thing. That way she wanted to choose, like, one for marriage, one for engagement, one for eternity, or whatever it is.
Needy, aren't they?
God, whatever it is.
I thought it was just one ring. Isn't it an engagement ring? Julie from Carindale, what's your worst proposal story?
My then partner came home intoxicated, and I had words to say about that.
Mm.
And he went to the bedroom and came back with the ring, got down on one knee.
Oh, he had a spare one. He had a burner.
And then when I answered, he literally fell back onto his back and passed out snoring.
Oh, happily ever after.
That's a good start.
You're like, that's my future husband. Mm. Awesome.
Anytime.
How's it going? We better get an update, Julie. Everything gone well since then?
Yes.
He's made up for it over time.
Mm.
Yes.
Still comes home drunk, though.
Yeah. Every time you fly.
Still mad at him.
We should have a baby. We should get a timeshare.
It's a good Band-Aid effect, isn't it?
Timeshare.
The Big Breakfast on Triple M.
Wake up with The Big Breakfast. Weekday mornings from 5:30.
104.5 Triple M.
Trouble in Paradise. Yes, Bali's blowing up. And Dobbo, you're here to report. Now, we got Melbourne Storm. A heap of them went over to Bali to have their little end-of-season trip.
Morning, guys. Look, 16 of them headed to Bali. I've been to Bali too and for an end-of-season trip. And you would think, could there be trouble? Well, there was. Last night it emerged. The front rower, Nelson Asokwa-Solomona from the Melbourne Storm, he's a big human from New Zealand. The All Blacks actually chased him and chased him. He's 200 centimetres. He's very aggressive.
6'8" and he's 122 kilograms.
Wow.
He's an enormous human.
And he is absolutely, but he's been caught on, allegedly caught, I've seen the video, allegedly caught on video, absolutely belting the bejeebers out of...
There was a giant hitting a normal-sized person lot of times
Who
in the video.
Who was the normal-sized person? Was it a Balinese person or was it another Australian?
No, it was another Australian. Now, the backstory to this is that Suli Vunivalu, the winger for the Melbourne Storm...
Who's big unit himself. Yeah,
was king hit with a bottle. Oh. And so... Nelson has actually gone in to defend a teammate.
So it's self-defence, is it?
Well, no. He's defending someone else. Yeah. That's not self-defence.
That's
self-defence.
That's called matemanship, isn't it?
No, that's a Balinese tourist visa. It's a stubby to the back of the skull. That's how you get in.
So now, was it a bintang?
I don't know the make of it. I do know that from from this incident. The Melbourne Storm have had to then report to the NRL. The Integrity Unit are now investigating, and Nelson Asopa-Solomona is back on a plane this morning. He'll arrive back in Melbourne.
Did he get all his tattoos finished?
I don't know. He got the whole. He has a very good leg tat, Nelson, but I'm not going to tell him about it.
Because he is Samoan Kiwi, isn't he? Hey, listen, did the stubby break?
I have no idea about that. What I do know about this is that Brisbane had a few players who were going to go over. I spoke to Jake Turpin on Friday night at the Broncos. And he said, are you going to Bali's parents? He goes, no, I've backed out of that. But why Melbourne would let 16 of their players go to Bali on their own, not with a security guard, chaperones of some sort.
On that point, what do you have to clear your travel plans with the club before you go?
Well, I would the club.
I think they're supposed to. I know all the trips that Corey's been on, they've sent security guards with them at the Broncos.
Yeah, make sense.
They went to Thailand, they've been to Vegas, they went up to Cairns, and they always had two security guards accompany them at all times.
What does the security... What humans need
to protect the locals.
Yes.
Rush hour back from 6 this evening. Thanks, Dobbo. Big breakfast, Triple M.
Can I just get the attention of anyone working outside, constructions, etc., and just run this new rule? I don't think it's a law, it's a rule that has been brought in. Now, you may not have seen it over the weekend, but the CFMEU, the Construction, Forestry, Machinery, or whatever it is, you know, the big union that controls construction, okay? Mm-hmm. Yep. They've brought in a rule, or they've negotiated this rule with about 140 contractors, including Brisbane's biggest, and you've heard me talk about it before, Brisbane's biggest ever building site is the new casino there at Queen's Wharf along the Riverside Expressway. They control that site there, the CFMEU. They've negotiated with everyone for a policy. When the temperature hits 28 degrees and the humidity hits 75%,
beautiful.
Stop work.
No.
Stop work and go home. Now,
why?
Because they said it's dangerous. It's a heat stress policy that they're trying to bring in. And it is hot here in Brisbane. It was a lot hotter up in Cairns. If you want to work up there, they get no work done. So if they bring in this, and apparently they have, if you're a contractor who works, who deals with them, you've had to sign off on this and agreed to let your workers go home when it hits that 75% when it's over 28 degrees.
Of course they're going to sign off on that and say, yeah, sure, give us a day off when it gets hot and beautiful and we'll go to the beach instead.
Who benefits from, no one benefits from that because it adds so much cost to the building. It slows down because they've got a budgeted time where that casino and all their other projects that they've negotiated this on have to be finished.
Do they still get paid?
I don't think so. Surely they don't get paid. I don't know that bit.
It's years away, isn't it, that it's meant to be completed? Like, was this, do you think, in the works already before they set that end date?
No, I think this has only just happened. They would have been having meetings for a fair while. Because the thing is, previously, if it hits 37 degrees, that was it. You know, knock it on the head. Didn't worry about
humidity. That's fair. 37 degrees
35 to 37. You had to make special arrangements for people to work outside of direct sunlight and out of the heat. And they were the rules. That was the only rules that I've grown up with in construction. And now this has gone 28 degrees to combine with the 75%. Now, I've done a little bit of research. The average mean temperature of Brisbane is over 28 in December, January, February, March. A third of the year has average over 28.
What about
not
the humidity?
All of those days are humidity. About a 20, they reckon it may be about, this could involve 20 to 30 days of the year
that they're just going to get sent home.
Or not turn up because they already registered. Or maybe by 9 o'clock it hits 28 degrees and the tool's down. How is this going to impact? What would happen if this was brought in for everyone? What would happen to the building industry if this was a thing? I don't know how much work would get done. Ryan from Cooper's Plains, what would happen if it came into your world?
Oh, mate, it'd just completely stop, wouldn't it? To be 100%.
Well, not completely stop, but you'd end up working 3 days a week.
Well, 14 days in February.
I'm originally from Townsville, North Queensland.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So our temperatures over December, January, February are usually in the 35, 38 degree mark, and usually around about that 75 to 80% humidity.
The humidity.
So in North Queensland, it would most definitely stop. I think it's a joke, to be honest.
Do you think we've gone soft, Ryan?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Like, coming from Townsville, the temperature down here, even at 33, 35, 38 degrees,
luxury,
is amazing. It's just, I love it. It's a different heat.
Why couldn't we do things like, instead of saying, you know, you don't work if it's 28 degrees and 75% humidity, just put like more breaks in place or make sure water on site is mandatory.
There are people with heat risk policies and they go 5 minutes off every hour. Let's stand in the shade, have a drink and then back into it. It is hellish.
That's sensible.
It's hell on
that
earth.
Sounds like common sense to me.
Check with Chris. Hey, Chris, I'm being told a union official maybe?
Yes, mate.
What do you guys reckon? So you involved with this?
I work for the ETU and we've just accepted the same policy into our agreement.
All right, so it's a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing. You've got to accept where this comes from. This wasn't just something made up just, you know, for the way you're portraying it to get guys to have a day off and go to the beach, Margo.
That's why we've got you on, Chris. We do want to know why and how this is going to work.
This has come about because there's been deaths in the industry due to heat stress. So heat stress, you've got to realise it's not just something that happens there and then. It's something that's accumulative. It's a bit like it gets equated to drink driving. So it's like having one beer, two beers, three beers, four beers. So if you have 3 or 4 days of excessive heat, that heat stress accumulates in the body and therefore it shuts down your organs. Now, there's been a coroner's inquiry into this, and this policy come about due to scientific evidence and everything like that, and a coroner's recommendation that the policy had to be put in place. The CFMEU were on the forefront, put this policy in their agreements. But you've got to also understand how it works. So at 28 degrees and 75% humidity kicks in after 9 a.m.
Right, but what happens if it cools down at 3? Do you expect them to hang around and start working again at 3?
No, because the day finishes at 2:30. So what the thing is, they don't go home.
In the union world, it does. Chris, in private enterprise, you're still going as a tradie till 4 quite often.
And as I said, this is a policy, Marto, that's been adapted by the CFMEU companies that have signed on to an EBA.
It's gonna happen. This is a thing that this summer it's going to happen. How many days have you done an estimate? Is it like 13 or 20 days? How many days will be lost?
Well, who can predict that?
Righto.
Who knows?
Previous records.
Who knows? At the end of the day, it's going to come in, and it's for the health of the workers.
I just want to clarify. No one wants to hurt anyone at work.
Is it
across
all trades, Chris?
At the moment, it's for the trades that are covered by the CFMEU. As I said, which are your bricklayers, your concreters, mainly the people that work on top of the building, what they call the top deck. Work outside. And this is what I've got to clarify too, mate, which is not about sending the guys home.
Yeah.
The guys don't go home. What it says in the policy is the guys get relocated to a place where the temperature and humidity is at an acceptable level.
So they'll go down a level or two.
Yeah. All right. Well, you wanted an answer. You got one.
Well done, Chris.
Thanks,
you've been
Chris.
Wonderful, mate.
Thanks for that, Chris. Very
informed.
Breakfast. Triple M.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
I've got a little theory now. Brendo knows about it and he's already making fun of me. Can I run it by you, the other guys here?
Sure.
Is that all right? Okay. Now, I was with my mate the other day, and Nick, what happens as you get older, you hit 50, people in your life start dying. The older you live, the more people die. That's just a fact of life, okay?
Of course.
Mate and I on Friday night, we're having a few rums, and we're talking about a funeral that we'd been to recently.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And it was a burn-it job. It was a crematorium, okay? Took it away. And we're just talking about all the CO2 created by burning bodies. The other option, of course, my sister ran Logan Funerals for 32 years, Margot.
Okay.
So I was sort of involved in the industry.
You know a bit.
And we used to go to old, like the Toowong Cemetery, and you'd have to go, there'd be plots available, but you'd have to hand dig, the grave diggers would have to do all the jobs. There's not much land left to bury people anymore.
Well, aren't they bringing in like a cremation only thing now where you
That's not good for our environment.
You don't have the option to be buried, or you're not going to have the option to be buried soon unless you already have a pre-bought plot something. I just want to be embalmed and entombed.
No, well, that's...
like a pharaoh.
That's a mausoleum where somebody has to spend tens of thousands of dollars to do that.
I think I'm worth it, mother.
Okay. Should I write that down in case no one else, when you die?
Yeah.
What did
Can
she
you make
say
sure
again?
You implement that, thanks,
on
Marto.
October the 14th, she said she'd like to be entombed. Get me the concreters. Now, what we were talking about, pick a hole in this, is every week, instead of having your funerals and all that, have memorial services for people who died, but put all the bodies together down near the walls, down near Port of Brisbane, okay? And once a week, maybe on a Monday, well, maybe a Friday, doesn't matter about the day, take them all out on a barge about 50 kilometres out to sea, drop them off, the ultimate recycling.
Where are you dropping them to? An island?
Out in the sea.
Oh, just in the ocean?
Well, then the fish will all peck away at everyone, and that's the ultimate. A shark will grab them.
Is that healthy for the marine environment?
Really healthy. Well, that's all they're eating. They're eating whatever they can get their fangs around.
Do fish eat
a
meat?
A dead person.
Yeah, fish eat. Cause fish eat meat. All fish, like big feet, eat other fish.
Does that make them pescatarians?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? If you started eating humans, what would you be called as a fish? Well, you'd be called a shark. But tell me, is there's a problem in that, Nick Cody? What would be wrong with that? We're helping the environment. We're way out to sea, so you
wouldn't. It just seems a bit barbaric, don't you think?
No.
Like the burial
barbaric
is nice.
Barbaric to waste all the land.
Yeah, that's right.
A little burning bit of concrete where you go see someone once in a while.
Or maybe you could bury people in the ground and feed the earth without the coffin and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, who cares about who is eating worms? Like, we're eating fish.
Yeah.
Do you want to be eating fish, though, that are eating other humans?
You know, I want it to be like the old Eskimos, you know, where somebody gets old and they put them on that little bit of ice and then just push them out to sea.
That's wonderful. What happens then?
I reckon it's like, hey, guys, I'm pretty sick. You know what to do. Get on the jet ski. Just fang out until a shark gets you. Cody's funerals. It's not going well so far, I'll be honest. My company is in dire straits.
Haven't got much business.
Big breakfast on Triple M.
Brisbane Broncos 2019 end of season ball was on Friday night. It's a huge affair, boys. They always have a massive turnout. I reckon there was 800 people there on Friday night.
Where'd they hold it? Convention
Centre? They have it at the Convention Centre every year. I think they have done for the last at least 10 years that I've been attending. It's been there. But it's a great night, you know, and all the corporates and sponsors and the team and everybody goes, all the media, everybody goes along. It's a really, really great night. And, of course, the women, the NRLW, Brisbane Broncos, have won back-to-back premierships. So there was huge celebration in and around the fact that the girls had won.
Yeah, good stuff.
And the Broncos had something to celebrate, obviously, because their men's team obviously didn't have the season that they wanted to. Right. They addressed the Parramatta game. Both Paul White, the CEO, and Anthony Seibold talked about it, and obviously it wasn't the result that we wanted. It definitely wasn't.
What did they say, though?
Well, that it was definitely not the way that they wanted their season to end, and that the Broncos are better than that. And let's talk about the direction in which we're going for, you know, 2020. There's going to be some change around the club.
Any mention of captains?
No mention of the captains, but Darius Boyd got his 300 games trophy, so he's been inducted into the 300 club.
Did he do it? Did he make his retirement announcement?
No, he didn't, Mardo. No, he's got two more seasons left on his contract. One is a definite and the second year is an option, you know, that hopefully, depending on his form, will or will not go in his favour.
Righto.
But it was a great event. You know, Alfie was up to his usual tricks.
Yeah, I think Alfie had been at lunch at the Reds lunch.
He had been at the Reds lunch, and you could tell that he'd gone from a lunch into a dinner affair because he had a couple under his belt.
That is a big day.
But that's not surprising for Alfie because, you know,
he's fit.
Alfie. Yeah.
He's fit.
And, but yeah, it was a great night. Everyone looked beautiful, you know, and when all of the festivities finish, you know, they have all of the speeches and everyone gets up to talk and they do all of the awards. An interesting thing, though, that with the awards, there was one person who was missing from the night, and that was Payne Haas, because he is debuting in the Prime Minister's 13 over in Fiji.
That's right. He was playing that night.
Yeah, that night. And Payne Haas took out most of the awards. He took out the Player of the Year, which is the Paul Morgan, which is the big one, wasn't there to receive it. He took out the Best Forward, wasn't there to receive it. Took out Rookie of the Year, wasn't there to receive it. Took out Player's Player, wasn't there to receive it.
It should be, if the raffle gets drawn, a redraw straight away.
Like a meat raffle.
If you decide to go home.
You're not here, we'll give it to someone else.
Exactly.
You reckon?
Get the engraver. Pain half my ass.
So there was a lot of people who were obviously presenting the awards, accepting the award on behalf of him. And and then they, you know, if you can all turn your heads to the screen. So there'll be a lot of sore necks, I guess, tomorrow.
Did Payne
yesterday
record
morning.
A video
Little
message?
Video for each of the awards that he
I'd
received.
I'd really like to thank the Broncos. I've never heard him talk, actually. I guess he might talk like that.
He's a really large man. What is he, 112 kilos and 200 centimetres? But he's got the quietest, beautiful, like most beautiful little voice. He's very soft and gentle. He's like a big, gentle giant.
His mum's been in a bit of trouble at times. Was she there?
I don't think
so,
no.
She likes throwing a few Nelson-like punches at times.
You would have thought, had she been there, maybe she would have got up and accepted the award on his behalf. But no, he didn't. And he wasn't there, so he's sorely missed. And also sorely missed, which I noticed, was a lot of the team after the formalities had ended.
What do you mean?
Well, they couldn't get out of there quick enough, Marto.
Gone are the days. To the pokey lounge.
Soft, I'm going to call them, the current team of Broncos. Soft, because back in the day when, you know, we were around and Corey played, the players were there till the very end on the dance floor at midnight with their shirts unbuttoned, their ties off and a vodka in their hand, singing karaoke pretty much. You kicked out the band once the last song was played. You take the microphone from their hand and on they sung and, you know, jeered into the night.
Are you saying the team left quite
smoke
early?
Smoke bombs, you know, all of them. I reckon by about 9:30, 10 o'clock, 60% of the current playing squad were gone.
Maybe they don't drink.
No, Marto. My sources tell me that they went to a nightclub in Brisbane City to continue on their festivities there. But I just want to commend the NRLW team because they all stayed until the very last song.
Oh, that's because they're not getting paid as much as the men. They need to soak up every free drink they possibly could.
Yeah, all the free drinks.
There's no pokies lounge for them. They're playing two up.
And they had something to celebrate, I guess, that was a win.
It's a big breakfast on Triple.
Hey, listen, I'm sure I'm not the only one who sometimes has a bit of trouble getting my head around the Middle East and all the tensions and difficulties over there. And if you didn't know, the US have trying to pull their troops out of northern Syria. Turkey is trying to capture that vacuum that's been left by the US troops and are attacking the Kurds.
It's all very messy, isn't it?
I can see your eyes glazing over as mine are just even telling this story. All right, but it's lucky that we have President Donald Trump to give us some clarity about what the current situation is and also historical overview of that region. Heath, the bloke's a genius.
They didn't help us in the Second World War. They didn't help us with Normandy, as an example. They mentioned names of different battles. With all of that being said, we like the Kurds.
What?
I don't know.
That's
amazing.
They didn't help us, but we like them.
What's the statute of limitation on not helping? Well, we're not going to help you.
It's a big breakfast on Brisbane's Triple A. Margot looked very swanky on the weekend, went to the Broncos ball. Noticed something very interesting about the squad, I would say halfway through the night, would you say?
Why, thank you, Brendo. But yes, no, very interesting way to end the evening before the evening was even ended.
We'll get to what that was next.
It's very rare that we have to leave the shores of our own country to find a dumb criminal. But today, I present you with a story from Arkansas, in the south of the US of A. I want to know if you guys have heard of a better excuse than this. A woman and her brother were pulled over in a car in Hot Springs, Arkansas, when cops saw them pulling out of a parking lot without headlights on, right?
Oh, yeah.
They've been pulled over. The cops said they smell weed in the car, and the woman was a bit fidgety and began moving around the vehicle in a quick, nervous manner.
Who was driving?
She was driving.
Yes, okay.
They thought, obviously, this lady looks a bit sus. Mm. She said, there are drugs in the car, and I think my brother gave them to me.
The
brother's with her.
Omitting any accountability.
The cop said, so are you going to test positive for one of these drugs? And she said, yes, I'm going to test positive for methamphetamine because my brother gave me a meth sandwich.
Ooh.
Oh, you can get them
from the servo? Yeah. Or
as opposed to a ham one?
Is it a wrap? Can you get them in wraps? I'm a bit worried about the bread putting weight on me at the moment.
Trying to watch your weight.
Yes. Was it wholemeal or white bread, though?
I think I sorts that out.
That's the important question.
Oh, really? I'm just looking for a nice sourdough rye with ice on it, please. Oh, God. Avocado and ice sandwich. You'll never be able to afford a house.
It's a big breakfast, Triple A.
Check out the Subway $5 everyday value range. 4 seriously good Subway 6-inch subs. Delicious value all day, every day at Subway. Limited time only at participating restaurants. Additional costs for extras.